Hi everyone, and welcome back to the Gentleman's Talk. I've got a really sort of kind of, I'm going to be brutally honest, I wasn't going to do a podcast tonight. Still feeling a little bit under the weather from a heavy weekend. Seems that that we're on day four, and I'm feeling a bit tired, and had a long day today, you know, sort of travelling for work and stuff like that. So I was going to have a night. However, you know, the turn of events from today sparked such a massive overload of memory on a topic that I was actually wanting to talk about. And this was just me kind of not just talking about stuff I'm going through now, but also showing that the stuff I've gone through, the process I've had to sort of deal with, you know, for everything, through the past 10 years. And it's incorporated quite a big chunk of my life. Now, I had like a mixed reaction to something that was told to me today. And I've had a completely opposite, you know, it's been resolved as positive now anyway. But I must address why I got there, because it was an hour. And the best part of an hour on a topic I wanted to talk about that actually just happened to happen, you know. So what am I talking about? He's like, well, just spit it out, James, spit it out. And it's about working with PTSD, as in, you know, I'm going to give more of a perspective on trying to be a manager with PTSD and, you know, depression and anxiety, and showing that, you know, just the challenges that I faced, the challenges that you may be facing, may be similar, maybe, you know, you're going through something completely different in your, but, you know, it's also relatable. You know, there's all sorts of ways to look at this, but, and hopefully, you know, maybe the proof's in the pudding to show that here I am with a different mindset, and, you know, this is the journey. This is showing a little bit of past and present, really. And hopefully just the future then just gets better. But I managed to analyse everything. I managed to, when I was told this, this line, I instantly had mixed feelings. And what I'm talking about is, so I used to work for a Basic Circo, an old company of mine. And I loved that job. I really, really, really did. And I had the car crashes whilst I was under their employment, all of them. And, you know, they looked after me. They really did. And I invested my heart and an absolute soul into that place. And, you know, a mixture of things, like I said, you know, I made that my home, because that's where I felt basically at peace. It's where I felt comfortable. It's where I felt loved. You know, I used to live, basically I lived there for almost 6 months, because of, you know, you cast your mind back to some of the original podcasts, if you can remember. And you know, when I was going through the deepest of my depression, that you know, I was getting, you know, pissed around and messed around. I don't know whether I've told you, actually. I need to know if I have addressed this, because I might have addressed it in a video when I used to use go on YouTube. But let me know, because if I haven't, it's quite a big story, actually. It may be something I can dabble in today, actually. So anyway, I lived and breathed Circo. I really did. And it basically, it was the only thing that really gave me hope in life. I don't know why. I think because I channeled, I seem to, my depression and PTSD seems to have channeled me to, you know, working, actually fucking grafting and giving up my life to work. It's something I'm addressing now, really, really had to address, because for 9 years I gave my life up for this company. You know, and when I cast my mind back, and you know, to give you a little bit of a context of how, you know, invested in that place I was, and I had to be, really, for my own mental health, and, you know, all the other reasons, you know, there was a lot of things that had to be dealt with there. And when I was in my deepest depression, I was renting accommodation, and just to give you a quick update, if you have heard it, I can give you a quick update on it. And I had to rent these places. So I was paying $650 a month on average for a room in someone's house, and that's quite difficult to do. I'm going to be honest with you, but I couldn't do the traveling anymore. I couldn't travel up that journey. So I had to come up with an alternative, and the alternative was live away during the week and go back at weekends. That was the alternative. So I lived up there, and it actually became, you know, my permanent address in some of them. And I had like an absolute amazingly bad experience of renting, you know. So one of the rooms I rented, and I lived there for, I think, the best part of a year. I think it was a year. No, it was about 8 months, actually. It's about 8 months I was living in that one. And I'd made myself as homely as I could there, but it's acknowledging it's someone else's house. Used to play music really loud, and I'd be fucking knackered after work and all this sort of stuff. And, you know, it would drain me, and I'd be like, fucking just turn your music off. But because she was getting a rent paid for her, out of me for one room, you know, she was living the life of Riley. And that became abundantly clear the way I left. So I went away for Christmas, and this was sort of kind of what the level of my anxiety would go to. And when you're in depression, it's just constant bump after bump after bump. And, you know, I went back for Christmas, but I paid for the full month. And, you know, I was there. Even though I wasn't in the room, I was like, well, my stuff's in there, so I'll pay for the security of the stuff. Because she allowed me to keep TV and stuff in there. So happy with that. Went away for the 2 weeks, came back, and I didn't really want to come back to work because I'd had a really good 2 weeks with my family. I'd seen everybody, so I was a bit negative, you know. I kind of walked through the door, you know, as late as I could. Excuse me, my drinker. I think the cold is where I've been coughing today is tickled my throat, so it's a bit hard today to talk away. So I'll settle down. Yeah, I came back after, so I was a bit tired, and it was about 7 o'clock on the Sunday night, ready for Monday morning. And I went in the room, and I just didn't feel like, I was like, things have moved. I'm very OCD and very particular. I know exactly where my stuff is. Because if I'm like that, then I know when I go to get something for work or whatever, it's there. So I'm very OCD. I know exactly, I plan everything to a T. And I went in, and I was something didn't feel right. My towel wasn't how I left it, because I almost take a snapshot before I go. Like, I know where everything's laid and if she's been in and cleaned or whatever. And then I fucking was like, oh, okay, fuck it. I'm not really bothered. And I pulled back the bed and to get into it, and it was covered in hairs, black hairs, and a couple of like pubes. It was fucking horrendous. And basically, I was like, well, I'm not fucking staying in this bed. You know, I don't know what the fuck's been going on here. So it confirmed that someone had stayed there. So I got up and I went back fucking home, and I texted her the next day saying about, you know, what you're gonna do. And she was, oh yeah, we had my daughter and her boyfriend stayed in it all night, a week of like the 2 weeks. And I was like, but you haven't cleaned it. And she was like, oh, I'll get the cleaner to do it in a couple of days when she's back round in. And I was like, no, mate, I'm paying you £650 a fucking month for a room. You can get in there and fucking clean it now. And it put me off so much that I just went, do you know what, fuck you. I didn't leave a deposit, so I wasn't really fucking bothered. And yeah, I just fucking chinned her off. Just went, absolutely not. I'm not fucking doing it. So then she texts me saying, her boyfriend rung me saying, are you coming back? You haven't paid the rent. And I was like, no, I'm coming back, mate. And I explained why, because he didn't know about that side. And he was like, well, look, mate, you're literally paying her mortgage for it. She relies on this money. And I was like, yeah, but I'm paying her the money. I rely on the security of my equipment, and I rely on the cleanliness of the room. I'm not here to fucking bed hop with, you know, with people. Do you know what I mean? So that was like my experience. And they, to be honest, they kept getting worse. They really did. And I had like 3 or 4 really bad experiences up there. So, you know, when I had like I think it was like the third experience where I'd kind of had a negative feedback. One of them meant actually going round. I was so emotional that I couldn't. This is how low I was. I'm quite a confident person, but I had to go everywhere with my mate Kieran. And because we worked together, it was absolutely fucking amazing. Because I remember saying to him, look, mate, I need to go and get my deposit back. I'd fallen out with the landlady. She wouldn't let me. I needed to get my dog. My dog was having anxiety because, you know, he was barking, playing, not anxiety. He was having like, you know, he's just been a dick, really. So he needed his owner, because I'm his owner, you know, he needed someone to control him. So I was like, well, I've got to come up here. And I spoke to the woman. I was like, look, he's house trained, you know, he'll come up here, just sleep on the floor, no problems at all. And she was like, oh, yeah, okay, well, is he going to be okay with my cat and all this sort of stuff? I was like, I don't fucking know. I honestly don't know. But if I finish work at basically my hours were 7:30 in the morning until 9 o'clock at night. So, and I did work those hours in them days. I fucking was living there basically. And I thought, well, there's no point, because there's no point in going back to a dull room on your own. So I used to sit and work, just watch TV, and then just fucking get up, basically go back, brush my teeth, go to bed. It was a shit life to live, really. I thought it was the best life, but, you know, when you actually put it into context, it was a fucking awful life. and anyway, so she said no, and I was like, well, I can't stay here then. And she was like, oh, well, that leaves me in the shit. And I was like, I don't really care, love. You've told me I can't have my dog. I need to find somewhere for my dog. I need to look after my dog. And she turned around and said, she goes, oh, well, you need to pay me a month. And I was like, no, I don't. I said, there's nothing in the clause. You just said I've got to give you 2 weeks' notice. Well, I've paid you for this month now, so you need to give me half. I need to give you the 2 weeks' notice, and then at the end of the month, I don't owe you anything. You just need to then give me my $450 security deposit for the room. And so she was like, she hummed and ahed, and I said, look, I've got the contract that we signed and the message, which was our verbal contract, and there it is in black and white. So she got a bit shitty with me, and I didn't really want the confrontation, which is crazy, because she screwed me over, and I just wanted to get my money back. But I couldn't do it. I was like, Kieran, can you drive me down? And I was, when you reflect back, you realise how deep in with anxiety you are. And I play it down, because at the time, I was so fucking focused and fogged up with work that I didn't really analyse anything. No, fucking nothing I analysed at all. So, you know, and it gets even worse, you know, when you actually think about, right, so this is where I'd got to. So then I was like, I'd spent a lot of time over over about a year before just making the office space warm, cozy, comfortable. I don't know why. It's almost like a nesting thing, I suppose. I don't know. Maybe it was just me really investing, trying to make it feel like home, because I was there so much that I wanted it to feel like home. And to be honest, it did. We got 3-seater leather sofas free off of like Facebay, and you know, put them in, but they were nice. We had to make sure that we looked for brown leather so they all matched. You know, we had tables made. We had like, I brought loads of my artwork and stuff that I'd painted and stuff I'd taken photos of. I put it on the walls, so it almost felt like home. You know, I changed stickers and things like that, and, you know, to make it feel like it'd be a framed picture. There was like a Valentino Rossi one. So when you reflect back, you actually realise how much I thought that was home and how terrifying that is to think that I lived. And then it gets even worse. Because I moved out of that woman, I had nowhere to stay. And I was like, well, I'll just crash in work for a couple of days until I get myself sorted. A couple of days turned into 6 months. So for 6 months, from Sunday until Friday morning, I was on my own 24/7 in work. I lived and breathed it for 6 months. The saving grace for me was my dog was with me. But we had a routine. We would literally, you know, right down to, I would go in and I'd have my microwave fucking meal, and I'd do my squats and stuff in the front office space that was nice and big, and I'd do my yoga, and then I'd watch a bit of shit TV. Then I'd have 3 fucking double quilts that were stuffed into a locker downstairs with pillows, and made myself as homely as possible. You know, yeah, it was fucking horrendous. But I did that for 6 months, and then it got to the point, was at the end of that 6 months, I went, I just fucking can't keep doing this. I really can't, but I don't know what else to do. And luckily, I stayed in an annex once with this absolutely amazing family, the Trotters, they were called. Henry Trotter, absolute legend. He was just a really good guy. They were a really good family, and they'd let me in briefly. I was in there for a couple of months. They had an annex, quite a posh house. It was out in the sticks, you know. So they had a tennis court and acres of land. It was lovely. I remember sitting out one night. I come home and Henry was like, "Oh, James, come over here, boy. Come over here." And I was like, "Oh yeah, I'll come over here, mate." Bearing in mind, I'm quite a fucking ruffian, but tattoos on me, and. He walked over and go, "Come here, have a beer. Look, just let's admire this garden. It's fucking beautiful." And I'd be like, "Ah, fucking hell, Henry, you've done a stone." I'd just switch into fucking dickhead mode, you know, like, "Yeah, Henry, done a fucking fine job, sir. you're putting down a little bit of, you know, bit of sand and stuff, you know, a bit of Epsom salts, get a bit of vibrancy back in the old grass blades. Oh, bloody hell, James. You're not just a pretty face. That would be the conversation. I'd be lugging a beer down. And, you know, and I'd almost go in. I'd almost go in, like, fucking, how did you sound like that, you fucking idiot? I can't remember their son's name, but his son's was, like, full on. I went out one day and, you know, I was by my car and he was saying to me, he literally went, you know, James. And I was like, oh, yes. I can't remember his name. I can't say it anyway. But anywho, he was like, yeah, he goes, James, he said, I've got a lovely BMX, James. Oh, I've got a lovely BMX, James. In a posh voice. I can't do it. It's a fucking posh voice. But we'll put a posh voice on for the show. And he'd be like, I've got this BMX, and I was like, bloody hell, that's quite a nice BMX there, mate. And, you know, he'd be like, yeah, it cost me like £150 of my birthday money. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to sell it for £20 profit that I can pocket and then still have funds for the next one. I was like, dude, you're fucking 4 years old, mate. And you're talking to me about business. I have no fucking idea what you're talking about. But different education, you know? So anyway, I had a lovely time there. You know, I used to sit there. They used to play tennis every Tuesday and Thursday. And I used to be in the annex above, right by the tennis court. And I'd be sat in there and they'd be like, oh, fucking good shot. Good shot, Dave. Fucking sterling job. Dave, you're phenomenal. You've really come on leaps and bounds since you got that female trainer. What are you doing? Porking her? You know, that sort of shit, really. Anywho, we'll digress massively. But yeah, they were good. So they made, and I was, you know, I was living there for 6 months. I thought, I fucking can't do this anymore. I can't keep doing this. My mental health was, I remember driving around to Squadrons once, and I was talking to Kieran, and he was sat in the car with me, and you know, I just fucking sat there, and I was like, I just don't want to go on anymore, mate. And he was like, what? I was like, I don't want to go on. I can't fucking keep doing it. He's like, you need to go home. I was like, where the fuck is home, mate? I don't know where home is. And that's what it felt like. It was, I didn't know where fucking home was, you know. And he, bless him, he couldn't really, he doesn't know what to sympathise with me with, you know. He doesn't, you know, it's not like that, is it? But when someone says that, you know, that was like, it was me fucking screaming because I didn't know where home was. And so anyway, I contacted, I can't remember, I do know her name, but I won't say it. But I contacted her anyway. And I said to her, oh, you know, I think I see your room back up for rent in the spa. She's like, yeah, we're trying to, you know, rent it back out again. So I was like, right, okay. I said, I can do this, but I can't do this much money because she wanted like £700 a month. And I was like, look, I can pay £500 because I need to save to sort myself out. She actually agreed. She was like, you're the best tenant ever. You know, we want you back. We'll take you back because you're regular. We put it up to the market price, but we'll put it back down. So really, really accommodating. So I then, you know, carried on, moved in and, you know, lived there for a year. And in that year, that's when I decided I was going to go. I decided, you know, I'd had enough. I said, you know, I'm Foxtrot Oscar. So for me, it was right up to Christmas. So I made that decision, right, well, I'm going to spend this year just sitting down on my own, just getting through, doing whatever I can, finishing courses in work time, doing whatever the fuck I could, saving as much money as I could. And I just went, that's it. And my ambition was, I moved in there on the January. My goal was to get back to real life in December. And in October, I got the job. I moved out in December and I only did 2 months back at Serco when I'd taken the job and moved on. And that was me. I was like fresh life. But to get to that point, that, you know, and to sort of kind of really highlight the level of commitment that I'd put in, if you can imagine, and this is looking at not just looking at the journey of staying there and how invested I was, when you look at the investment I put into that place, and I used to go there, I'd be working on Sundays, I'd be doing stock checks, I'd be walking around, everyone would go home at like 5 o'clock, and I'd be there, well, I've got nothing else to do, so I might as well go around and do stuff. So I was going around and fucking signing stuff up and, you know, cleaning the place up. I was just constantly there. I never ever left the place. And for that reason, you know, everything was fucking top notch. It was like, I lived and breathed the Walls. I know every fucking inch of that place. I've done so many fun things, crazy things. I've got so many memories there because I literally lived and breathed there. Now, you know, this is sort of kind of, well, how did that, you know, how do we get onto that aspect? Well, so I, on that whole journey, and bearing in mind, because I lived it and breathed it, I was depressed. I had major PTSD. I was a fucking horrible, horrible person. But a really good manager, really good trainer. I was so invested in the work aspect that it helped me not do the bad shit that I was doing out there before. But then they would still suffer because work was my heaven. Work was everything to me. So everyone else was kind of second fiddle, really. It was like, you're just getting in the fucking way. And I remember being at home once I was deep in living there. And I remember sitting there going, I remember getting up one morning on a Sunday and fucking going, all right, I'll see you later. She was like, what? You're going earlier and earlier. And I'd leave at like 9 o'clock in the morning. And I'd be like, yeah, I'm just going to. And I would just sit on the grass outside work. Like you should do at home. And I used to go up there and just sit on the grass, like, to the point where I'd have, you know, bottles of Coke and fucking all sorts and Magnum ice creams. And on Sundays when I should be sat with my family, I'd go up and sit and work. It was quiet. No one was about. It was fucking over the other side of the airfield. And then I'd go up, I'd have a shower, do everything, you know, stay there the fucking night. So I lived and breathed it. So you can imagine that everything that came with that was, I invested all of my powers of ignoring the PTSD and ignoring everything, all the signs, the symptoms, everything, just because everybody just saw me as a fucking hard worker and, you know, saw spouts of me, you know, the anger sipping out, and a lot of them heard the stories of me slipping out, and I'd come back into work and be like, what's up with you? You're really angry. Oh, I just fucking chased someone for like 45 miles, tried to beat the shit out of him. Oh, you're a dickhead. And sort of play it down because they're like, I know he's probably done it, but it's James, it's all right, you know. So you never really got that kind of, you know, even when you think that I lived there for 6 months, I invested that much into it. There was never really anyone picking up on the signs because I hid it so well. Hold on, I sip my drink. You know, I hid it so well because I was so focused on work. So from a professional standpoint, I invested so much that everyone around me didn't want to acknowledge that I was in a shit place because I was making their life easier below me because they were going home earlier. I was doing all the fucking donkey work. I was doing stuff on a Sunday. And because I was doing that and they sending them home at 5, 6 o'clock and then staying there till 7, 8, 9 to do the bits that they should have done. And, you know, you walk round and you think to yourself, I've let them go early and, you know, they haven't signed the fucking tool board. And you sign the tool board and you come in the next day and I'd be like, yeah, I've fucking done it, mate. It gets to the point where it's getting so fucking disheartening, I just couldn't be arsed. But they had a really fucking easy life. And that was to the detriment of my own health. My fucking own health was literally ripped apart. So I lived and breathed it. So, but from a standpoint, you don't really see the signs there because, you know, no one socialised me. I wasn't socialised. I didn't drink. When I did socialise, I used to put on the fucking brave face. So everybody around me, apart from mainly my close family, really, got the blunt end of the deal. They're the only ones that really saw the fucking after effects of me going home and exhausted because I've lived and breathed work. And with a fucked back, I've slept on a fucking sofa for 6 months, which is a shitty old leather thing, sweating my ball bag off in the fucking sun, you know, all those sort of things, or sticking to it, you know, it did that for 6 months, and it was pretty much over from like June to, yeah, it was about June right the way through, so I had like the whole fucking hot season and freezing season in there, so. And the heating never worked. I remember one fucking Sunday bring my tools in because I was so cold one night that I had to, and I didn't want to put the electric heaters on because it dries the air, not because of the energy, man. I didn't really give a fuck. But it was because it dried the air and it made my fucking throat sore and it made me really feel like shit. So I remember bringing my tools in and fucking asking, because I've asked plumbers and that to do it on camp and, you know, get the services. I ended up bleeding the system to get it all to be perfect. People would come in and go, oh, it's really fucking warm in here now. I'd be like, yeah, I think they bled the system. I'd been sat there for about fucking 3 or 4 hours on a Sunday, walking around all the radiators, getting everything out and fucking going. I even got the keys out to go and top the tank up. So, you know, I was doing all these things, you know, or I'd move the fucking office round to make it a little bit more feng shui. I lived and breathed it. I loved it. But I didn't just love that. That gave the management something, but I also was invested in all my team. I loved the fucking team. I literally gave heart and soul to everybody in that team. And, you know, I really, really sort of kind of invested in them, making their future better. No one looked after my future. I did that myself. And that's not because of, I'm not saying, fuck you. You know, I did that. You need to owe me. It's not like that at all. But what I mean is I was so invested in them that the only physical way I could invest in my own future was by shutting everyone down. So for that year when I moved into that room, I didn't. I disengaged from everybody in that place because I was like, I can't. If I concentrate on you, I'm not going to get enough strength to get out of here. I'm going to continue this fucking spiral into a depression that's going to be unavoidable to get out. I'm not going to get out. It's going to sink in. It's going to be unavoidable to sink in that deep. I can't do this. And the pain was awful because I had to stop investing in people that I genuinely loved. And it's not like I did love. I genuinely loved all my team. On all of their interviews, I said, I want you to be part of the family. I don't care about your skills. I will get you to a level where you can do the job. I'm more than capable of doing that. And I did with every single one of them. And, you know, it's difficult, but you don't get anything back. And do you want something back? Well, you do. You kind of want a little bit of a reward. And that's where I think the negativity comes in. And this is how I sort of swing around and get to the point of what sparked it. Now, to give you a sort of context, even when I was going through all that, bearing in mind I was a roller coaster of emotions. So I remember when I went for the site lead job originally. And I remember going in, speaking to my boss and saying, I want to go for the site lead. He was like, I don't think you're ready for this. And I was like, what do you mean I don't think I'm ready? I've been doing this job 15 years, mate. I don't know why you think I'm not ready. 15 years I've been doing this job on all multi-role platforms, everything. Really fucking, there's nothing I haven't done. He was like, yeah, I know, but I think that you're ready. I was like, I want to go for the interview, mate. You can't stop me. I want my application in. So I knew I had a good chance because the site lead role was for the camp that I'd been at for the best part of fucking, I think, 8 years at the time. So I knew it like the back of my hand, and I was almost doing the job anyway. And anyway, so I went to the interview, sat this fucking grilling interview, and answered all the questions, and I got refused the job. They said to me, no, we're not going to offer it to... Oh, so they offered it to someone else, and I was like, well, you've offered it to somebody who doesn't know the fucking platform or anything, and you're just doing it because he wants to get... It was kind of like... They had to do the interviews, I think, because there was so many interested in doing it. So I got refused. And then he was like... But the guy that went first said he didn't want it. So he was going to go to the next person. Now, the next person was me or this other guy that was... I think Russ's name was. And I knew I was leaps and bounds ahead of him because I've been doing the job longer and I just fucking knew. I'm not blowing my own smoke in my ass, but I'm a fucking good painter. And Doug came in to me and I said, so why is it not getting offered to the next person? And he went, oh no, you weren't successful. It was going to go to Russ, but Russ isn't ready. And I went, what, Russ? No, he's going to go to John, but John wasn't ready. And I went, but John didn't go for it. He went, yeah, he did. I went, no, he didn't, mate. And he didn't. And this guy, John, hadn't gone for it. He'd withdrawn his application. It was just because they didn't want me in the job. So then I carried on again for another 2 years. And then I walked in and said, you know, I want to do the job. So I had to sit an interview. So again, I sat an interview. And I sat with the two leads. And they grilled me. And I asked them fucking answered all the questions. Even the second person come up to me, Mick Lavin, and said to me, I was the best person he's ever interviewed. And I was like... He said, but, you know, it is what it is. And I walked in and I got told again, no. I said, no, you're not ready for it. I'd answered all the questions. And it was not. It was just because I was asking. They had to go through the motions. And I didn't get it. And then all of a sudden, just before I left, about 2 years before I left, and I'd been doing the job anyway, Doug comes into me and goes, you know, I think you're ready for the site lead. Do you want it? And I was like, yeah, but I want to do it, you know. I've wanted it for the last fucking thing. You know, I've been doing this job at this point now. It would have been 18 years. No, 19 years. Yeah, just over 19 years he offered it to me. So 19 years I've been running the place and he offered it to me. So I took it naturally. You know, a little bit of umming and ahhing because I was a bit pissed off, but I wanted it for my own progression, if I'm honest. Anyway, so, and this is where the negativity comes in for me, and it's a bit harsh, and please, I'll have a listen. I will have a person listening to this, but it's not against him. It's just me evaluating. 100%, I will get to the positive side of this. Trust me, just stick with it. This is, I know it sounds negative, but it's a very negative part of my life. It's horrendous. To the point where I almost think I got PTSD from working there because I was that consumed. When I drive past it, and I drove past it today, and I started getting like really bad heart palpitations and fucking breathing when I drove past the place because I just don't want to be there. I've closed it down. It fucking ruined my life for 8 years. Excuse me. Anyway, so I handed in my notice. So I'd been doing this job, so I did it for 2 years, and then I got to my 21-year point, that was it, my 21-year point, and I'd been doing site lead, and again, I'm super invested, so I'd done everything they want. We had 4 audits in my time while I was doing it, and including to the point where they wanted me to be the health and safety ambassador for Serco. This is what the DQAF has said. I got told we were the best site in all of the sites, so I got massive accolades all along the way. And really proud of myself. That's how fucking determined I was to make that the best place. I made that. And I'm not being big-headed, but I did. It was the number one unit on the whole of the contract. You ask anybody in the contract, what was the number one contract? When was it number one? And it will be my, shall we say, reign. Because I loved it. I lived and breathed that place. It was perfection for me. Dying, Rona. It was perfection for me. I turned that place into perfection. It was homely. It was warmly. We all loved each other as a team. We were all invested. The morale was boosted. It was just an exceptional place to work. I loved it. But that was on the front. But behind it, screaming, kicking, anxiety, fucking anger, kicking off. There's all sorts of things. But I'd invested so much in the people that they all kind of understood and tried to help me. And then, anyway, so I handed in my notice because obviously we got to this point where it's just fucking ruined me. I needed to get out. I had to move back with my family. I had to get back. I had to get into the real life. I didn't know how to do this, so I took a punt. I was like, I'm going to go and join the civil service, and I'm going to, you know, become a chef advisor. I've never done it before. I literally started learning last March. Last March, I started learning health and safety, and already I'm jumped up 2 ranks. Got level 6 behind me and everything. I'm super pumped for this. I wanted this and I want to get through it. I want to prove to myself that I can do this. So, I got to the point where, you know, I handed him a notice, and I handed my notice in on the Tuesday, and Doug was like, okay, you know, so it's fine. I'm sorry about this. Are you sure? Can I tempt you? I'm going to be in tomorrow. We need to have a chat. And I thought it was going to be one of these chats where he sort of says to me, don't go. You know, what can I fucking do for you? And this was the bit that fucking rips my fucking heart out, is because I've gone through the process of getting to this position. I've handed my notice in. I know there has to be a predecessor. I completely understand that. It's not a predecessor. I'm the predecessor, yeah. I know there has to be a new role, someone coming in. And I sat there, and Doug came in and he said, morning, James. He said, oh, guys, can you have a chat? And chatted to the other two tech ones. And then went and had a long chat, and they sorted stuff out, and then we had tea break, and I remember Doug coming in going, oh, come, we'll go and have a chat afterwards. James, can you come in and sit down? And I was like, yeah, man, you know. And on the horizon, we had a lot of projects, so I wasn't ready to leave. I knew I had to leave, but I was like, you know, this will be okay. They'll look after me. Anyway, I sat down, and Doug went, right, Laura, so James is obviously leaving. And spoke to me like I wasn't in the room, by the way. James is obviously leaving, you know, so we need someone to do the job. So Laura, you know, I know you're new, you've not been doing it very long, but yeah, you're site lead now, and Kieran, you're, you know, tech one. And I literally looked and went, he went, you know, sorry to see James go, but, you know, let's crack on, right? And then all I was in there for was, can you hand over for the next 2 weeks and make sure Laura knows everything? And I was like, and you know, I know it's cutthroat, I understand that, and I understand someone's got to take the job. I really 100% get that, but it was the work and the effort that I'd put in and everything to get turned down twice. And I'm not saying I'm better than them, because that's fucking wrong. That's arrogant. I'm not that person. But I knew I was so invested that, you know, I wanted it more. You know, it was almost like I wanted it. I knew I wanted it. I worked for it. And the way this company had treated me, there was no disrespect to the two people that got pushed up in promotion. They were fucking, that's fine. I understand. They take it on. They take the responsibility. I've always said that. If you take it on, you take the responsibility on, but just be mindful. And I was a bit pissed off a little bit because he'd given it away. And I did kind of, I was worried about the person who was taking over from me, and I didn't want them to, you know, sort of kind of screw it up, and wanted them to be happy, you know. And plus I was invested in the place, so I was carried on. So I remember leaving the job, and, you know, I worked. I did. I wrote all the emails for this person for 6 months. They used to bring me up in the morning and tell me what had happened the day before, and I'd write emails and then send them off. And I did that for 6 months until it got to the point where the friendship became at a breakdown. I suppose that it wasn't needed anymore. And you know, the friendship was like, well, no, I've done my bit, you know, crack the fuck on, sort of thing. So I was like, oh, cool, okay. And so I kind of moved away from that, and it was good. And then obviously that was a breaking point for me then, because I'm now removed the tie. And, you know, I've been up there a couple of times because I did have that kind of tie. And yeah, I had a similar spark today. And this is where the whole point of the story comes in, really. And the spark was I knew they had an audit today. So I was invested. I want them, this is their first audit, you know, without me. Because they haven't had one in the last year. I've only been gone away just a year. So it was their first audit without me. I haven't done anything. They've done all the work. But I'm keen to understand how they did, because I want them to do well, because I want to know that I've done well training them. And number one, they've done well with moving on and cracking the whip and still producing high standards. So I was invested. I was invested in that. And then I got so my mate was phoning me. So can I ring you? Like, almost a bit excitable, really. But I was like, oh, mate, it's probably gone really amazing. And it did. He rung me, and he'll listen to this. And it's no hard feelings. It's just I have to be honest about how I dealt with it, because I'm an honest person. So, you know, I have to just exactly say as I feel, because otherwise I won't be able to process it. And this isn't intended on hurting anyone, please, I promise you. But the way that I took the conversation was, and this just goes to show how negative I still am, by the way, with regards to that place. And that's why I still think I have trauma with regards to it, because the way that I reacted was, he said to me, I said, how's the audit? And he was like, yeah, went really well. He said, you never guess what? And I was like, oh, right, okay, what? He said, I had a chat with the boss today. And I was like, yeah, he goes, he asked it. Now, I didn't know what he meant really by that. So I was like, oh, okay. I said, did he? As in, like, you know, you jump along the conversation to see, well, hopefully he's going to enlighten me with what he fucking said, because I don't know. I've had a long day. He goes, oh, yeah, well, you know, obviously with that person leaving now, because the other person's quit now. And I kind of heard about this. So the person who took over from me, they've quit and they've moved on. So he called him in, and the boss called my friend in and said, you know, you want you to be site lead. And just sort of said, you know, if you don't take it, we'll have to give it to the next person, which the next person was so inexperienced, it's unbelievable. Fucking absolute fuckwit. So, you know, for me personally, I was like, wow. And so I took a negative fucking look to this. First off, I went, for fucks. And I took a negative towards my mate. I was like, you're not fucking taking it, are you? As if it's my fucking responsibility. Like, who the fuck am I? I'm not your dad. I'm nothing to do with you. You know, you've been given an opportunity. And this is where I spin a little bit of negative, but I spin it with a big bit of positive, right? So just listen in. Hush up and listen in. So, yeah. So I took offense and I got fucked off. So I was like, I've worked for it again, and you've just given it to this guy, who is an absolute legend, by the way, but has only been there 6 years. And I had like a bit of an emotion, an angry emotion at Circa for doing it, and also a protective emotion for him, because I was like, mate, I know the pressures that job can bring, and can you take them? And I thought that I judged it as in, no, you couldn't. I don't know how he's worked. I haven't worked alongside him properly for 2 years, you know, because the last year I didn't work alongside anyone. I let them do what the fuck they like, because I was interested in my life. And I've been away a year and a half. So for 2.5 years, that's a big time to advance, isn't it? So, and he's done a lot more, because he's managed to cope 100%. There's been no problems. Passed an audit. This is where my reasoning thought about it. And that was my instant reaction. I got angry. I was like, fucking place. That place is shit. The fucking company's shit. What a load of bollocks. I worked my ass off and you fucking... You chuck it again. So, and it almost... I took it from a negative point of view, from my side, that what did I deserve to work so hard, to get so knowledgeable in something, but to be told no, and twice, in a job that I was more than capable of doing. And even when I got given the job, I got no support at all. It was in the fucking deep end. You've got training and an audit to do. Boom, crack on, mate. So I took the fucking rough with the way I got in. So I took a bit of offence to it. I got a bit fucking angry, didn't I? You know, and my instant reaction was yeah, I fucking went, oh, don't fucking take it. And Kieran is obviously the most positive person. Where I was like, dude, I'm just going to do this, this and this. I'll get the courses. I'll get the experience. And looked at it how I did look at it in the end. So anyway, caveated with I was in a really fucking... I'm in a really shit place. I'm a bit tired. You know, I've got that negative downside, which is caused by my own. I'm not asking for sympathy. But I've got a lot of stress going on at home with my fucking family at the moment, a lot of stress. And it's consuming me. It's really consuming me. And I've got a little bit of stress with work and, you know, a boss that's been, you know, I think it's going to be potentially difficult between me and him. You know, nothing negative in a sense. We'll build those relationships. I like those because for me, those types of relationships, they're challenges. In the face of it. So for me, I challenge myself, and that's what you, at the end of the day, that's what they ask you on an interview. If you had a challenging relationship in work and you're like, yeah, well, this will be a positive one of those, you know. And so I go, yeah, actually that, and I make extra effort. One day I piped down, I let the fucking man speak, you know, shook his hand. It was really pleasant, and I think he saw that respect side of me again. So not that I didn't have respect, but we clash because I'm an ambitious person and he wants to be ambitious because he's got age on his side. You know, he's a lot older than me. So he's thinking, I want to get into places, and he can see that I want to as well. So that can be a bit of a put off for somebody, especially as he's not in a permanent role at the moment. It's still up for grabs. But I wouldn't be an arsehole and go for it. I'm not that type of guy. So yeah, so I took a bit of offence and I got a bit angry and I didn't think about him at all in that conversation. Once I'd heard him say that, and I undermined his enthusiasm for it as well, because he was so excited, because come on, he's been given an opportunity. Despite the way that my experience of me, I look at that now and I spun a positive on that and went, you got turned down twice. You've been to fucking rock bottom and still managed to get to that place because you were at rock fucking bottom. And look at where you are now. You've just built yourself up constantly, constantly. Loads of learning, loads of education to the point where I'm applying already for jobs above me. Again, I want to fucking progress because I know I've got the knowledge and experience now. So it's given me fight. It's given me that spirit. And if anything, I think it helped me get through because I think because I was in such a dark place, I relied on positivity. So when I didn't get that positivity, and we spoke about this, I didn't get the reinforcement, I didn't get the positivity, and I didn't get the reward. So, you know, for me, that was a big fucking hit, you know, mentally. So, and I rebuilt myself up, and that happened twice. So if anything, I think it's given me the strength. If I can fight that, and I've fought some fucking horrible places now, I mean, Christ, you know, World War III has gone on in my fucking head. Do you know what I mean? It's crazy. But I think it's given me the strength to speak out and be confident again. And I'm rebuilding. This is what this podcast is about. Confidence is spouting out because I can feel comfortable. And this is where the honesty comes in. And that's why I'm trying to be honest. So anyway, before I digress. You know, and it hit me like a wave of emotion. I'm not going to lie to you. I was angry. I was sad. I was fucking livid that he'd got the job. And I was like, he hasn't fucking worked for it. I went really negative. I was like, fucking what a knobhead. Anyway, so I went for a little walk around the garden. And bear in mind, we're talking fucking 6 by 5 by 6 foot. So, you know, I just had a little walk around the garden. No, I was just staring at the grass and just thinking, put some music on. And just didn't say anything. And then I was like, I switched straight off and went, what the fuck are you doing? You don't work there anymore. You have no investment in there anymore. It doesn't affect you anymore. So why are you getting upset with something that's happened to you? Why are you still harboring that grudge? It's done, it's dusted, it's rebuilt you, it's added you strength. Stop dragging up something that's happened fucking years ago. And all right, it was only a couple, it was only a year ago that the last incident happened, all right, but let's put it to bed. We don't need to drag it up, all right? Yeah, you might have been hard done by, but at the same time, so what? You're not the first and you won't be the fucking last. So then I was like, yeah, so shut your fucking mouth, James. So I had a little word with myself. And then I looked at the instant positive on that and gone like, it's exactly what I said. Caveat with the fact that I was like, well, you know, you've built yourself up to where you are now. You're in a senior role. You're better than you were at Serco, with lots of advancement and loads of career progression ahead of you. You're in a really good place. You know, you're rebuilding everything that's been fucking flattened for the last 10 years. You know, that's what I'm trying to do. Rebuild everything around me, relationships, friendships, you know, the stuff I've neglected around the house, the, you know, the neglect of the family, the love I haven't given. I'm building that up slowly. So I don't fucking care about that company. I don't care about that situation. So I flipped it across and went, right, well, and I said, James, and be positive about Kieran. This is a great opportunity for him. This is the perfect opportunity for him to get into a senior role. He's been handed it, which is, by the by, if I was handed it, I'd have fucking taken it with a golden handshake, and I'd have run with it. You know, I'm very much the same. I've done the same in some aspects myself. So I was like, no. I instantly text messaged him because I knew he was driving and then having his tea, and I was like, dude, I am fucking super sorry. I'm so sorry. There was absolutely no need for my animosity. I was a complete and utter dick. There was an element of protection and an element of anger that was aimed towards you, but it shouldn't have been. It should have been targeted at the company and my experience, and I should have kept that thought to myself because you were of no part of that. So I wrote all this down, as it wasn't perfect, and that was, you know, that was quite in depth, but it was along the gist of those lines. And I said to him, but I did, I said, super, I'm so sorry, mate, this is, I said, just get as many courses as you can, get as much experience as you can in that senior role, because if you do want to move or you want to progress, then boom, you've got nothing, something to stick on the CV, 100%, get that experience. And then I said, get the courses behind you to upskill you massively. You know, you're 40, you're only a year behind. I started learning. So get those courses in there and now start investing in yourself. Now start investing in you to get to a better place where you can do that. Because at the moment he was applying for work, and you know, because of the cost of living, get close to home, looking at alternatives. But almost, if I'm going to be brutally honest, scraping the barrel a little bit at the level that he was going for, because I know he's more capable of the level he was going for. But he thought, well, look, he'd do what I did, which is get in at the lower level to give you a little bit more guarantee, then show your worth and build yourself back up, which is a really good way of doing it. A really good positive. It's a long way of doing it, but at the same time, you get the experience in a nice way. So, like, I went in at low level, you know, health and safety. So for me, I was dealing with the bigger stuff, but only watching how people dealt with it. So I was able to take a lot of information in, and I also had a lot of time for courses because I was at a low level. So it's a really good way of doing it. And if you're career minded or ambitious and see the next level as a nice goal, it'll give you the ambition to keep going. God, Rona's got me, I think. Excuse me. Some nice relaxing tunes on in the background. So yeah, so I looked at the positive side of that, and I was like, actually, mate, fucking what you doing, mate? You should be helping this guy. So I said, look, mate, and I did explain him, I was honest with him. I said, I took offense because I don't like the way they've done that. And it wasn't harboring negativity towards you. I aimed it towards you because you told me the message. Now, he told me the message because he was happy, and he should be. He's been given an opportunity, grab it by the fucking horns and ride that fucking bull, mate. Keep on going. You know, that's the way I should have gone, mate. That's fucking, fucking company's a bunch of wankers for doing it that way. But fair play, mate, take it, grasp it, do what you can do. And that's, I didn't look at that because I still harbour resentment for the company because all they needed to do was invest in me. And it was, you know, it was funny that, you know, Kieran has sort of interpreted it, and I think we had a little bit of an exchange, not a negative exchange because we're not like that, but it was, you could have interpreted it. He said, it's all they can. He was sort of, in a way, trying to justify it, probably because I was a bit upset and I was honest in the text message. I am a bit of, I have to be, I keep saying it, but I have to be honest. And he said to me, well, it's, you know, all we can do, if I didn't take it, someone else would have taken it. And I turned around to him and said, well, actually, he said, it's because no one's ambitious to go through the ranks. That was what he said. And I said to him, I replied at saying, well, actually, there was loads of people already in the ranks, i.e. myself. They just didn't look after me. And, you know, he went, you know, yeah, absolutely. You know, because I was like, actually, there was a lot of ambitious people there. We wouldn't be in a situation where, you know, I did have my health and safety head on as well. And I'm like a dick. I was like, you're going into a role that you're not suitably qualified and experienced for. So, you know, and that's one of the HSC standards. And I said that and I was like, but that's fine. The company's responsible for doing that. It's up to them to upskill you. So, again, I caveat with positivity. So it was an interesting situation how, like, you know, I've battered all this and I've done that all with depression. I've done, and you know, to sort of kind of analyze it a little bit, you know, the mental health has given me massive amounts of kudos in work environment, but for this, that was, you know, to the detriment of my home life, my future, really, my family. And I know that there's a lot of people out there that will be the opposite. They'll concentrate on their family or themselves and not work, so they'll lose the income and then it spirals into bigger depression. Fortunately, because I'd worked up to quite a, you know, sort of senior position, relatively well paid, you know, I was living on my own, so the outgoings weren't massive. So I had the ability to sort of be comfortable. But at the same time, it wasn't comfortable for my life. It was okay having money to spend on things, but at the same time, it was only being spent. I mean, I remember buying fucking takeaways and then going back to the room, the fucking office, and sitting there and eating my takeaway at my little table like it was home. Do you know what I mean? Almost like a fucking single man, not realising I've got, you know, wife and three kids sat there fucking waiting for me, you know, asking, you know, where's daddy when I want to grow up? Because that's what I invested in. Because when I was at home, I was angry because I was tired, exhausted. I was fucking, the noise was overwhelming, which is ironic when I deal with noise all day fucking long in my work environment. But you come home and you stick me around kids and all that, I used to go fucking ballistic. So for me, it was very difficult to get that balance. So then I started resenting the home life even more because there was too much noise. People are like, do you want to come out here and come out with the kids? Absolutely fucking not, mate. I couldn't think of anything worse than going out with fucking noise. I just wanted to be peace and quiet. So it's almost like to the point where I was doing so much noise during the week that when I came to the weekend, I just wanted pure silence because I was exhausted. My mind was fogged up. My fucking head was hurting. My back was tense. So when I came home to be, you know, a family dad, and I couldn't do it because I was so exhausted from being, you know, a family dad almost, you know, at work. So I was doing everything. So I thought, you know, like most stuff, we do have difficult weeks, don't we? We've got work, family, and we're at home all week. So weekends are times where everyone wants to chill out. Well, unfortunately, when you live away during the week and do the same thing, your family dad thing, you know, you're kind of smashing out work, you know, you're living there, you're looking after your dog, you know, you're doing all this, you're looking after the guys at work and you're making sure they're skilled, happy, done, lovely. You know, everything's hunky-dory. Come on, guys, tea breaks. You're telling them when tea break is. You're almost treating them like fucking children. That's what I did. I was so invested in them. They were like my children, you know. But very difficult. It was, you know, you kind of, but you then try to come home at weekend, and of course, because your kids haven't seen you, because you've been away all week, and you want to be a family man, you can't because you're exhausted. So they used to get the brunt end of it. We'd go to fucking Southampton, and I'd come through the door, and I'd be like, "Fucking shit! Oh fuck this!" And I'd take it out on everyone. I'd be a fucking angry bastard. Excuse my Rona. So. Yeah, so difficult times. You can compensate too much. Like I said, you know, you can get to the point where you're crippled at home and you don't want to do anything else. You could be sad and in bed and not want to get out of bed. I wanted to get out of bed because I wanted to go and see my family. That was work at the time, and completely neglecting my own family. And that's why I'm struggling at the moment. You know, I've been home a year now. I've only been home a year, but in that year, it's been tough to try and reconnect with everybody because I'm an outsider. I was away for 7 years of the, you know, almost over half their life. I was away. You know, my youngest is like 11. Do you know what I mean? And I was away for 7 years. And that doesn't account for the time that I was actually away in Afghanistan when she was born, things like that. So, you know, you tie up the ways, you tie up the things, and you've hardly had any time with her. So no wonder they're a bit, and they're women, they're all girls. So they're invested in the emotion aspect, and all they've seen is angry dad for 7-8 years, you know. And when I've come back in, I've had to self-contain myself quite a bit, because I'm still adjusting to the noise and family life. You know, even walking through the door today, I was really stressed out. It's been a difficult day because I said my family and stuff like that. It's just a few little things going on, and I'd been stressed. I'd done a long drive, and I get anxiety about the drive. I'd driven up to that camp that was up towards Odium as well, so I had to do the journey that I fucking hate doing, and I had to do the journey coming back, to the point I realised at one point I was like looking down, I was doing like 95, because I was like fucking, oh shit, because I felt fast for a split second, but I just wanted to get off the road, and I forget I still do that. And going past that place is fucking terrifying for me, because I'm just all three accidents on that same road. So I was naturally exhausted. I was getting text messages from my fucking daughter giving me shit. And I was just, it was just overwhelming. So I walked through the door, and then obviously, you know, there's kids going on, and everything was just really bad. And even my wife turned around and said, I think you just need to go outside, mate. And I've been outside all day, all evening, because I just can't cope with noise and the stress. I'm just at my peak today. That's an element, a massive element to why I reacted with my friend. And I actually texted him as well a little while after. So to finalise, really, but I texted him afterwards once I realised I was the dick. But I'd been honest about it. And in other words, it was kind of like a way of hinting, saying, look, I'm fucking super proud of you, mate. You know, crack on. But I didn't really want to hear it, which sounds selfish, because I knew how I was going to react, and I didn't want to react to my friend like that, because I didn't react the way that I did in the end. That's the way I should have started reacting. Fucking brilliant, mate. Yeah, get as many calls as you want. Fucking love it, mate. You know, I didn't react like that because I knew I wouldn't. So when he said the words, I went, oh God, fuck, he said it. Oh, no, he's going with this. Oh my fucking God. And then it just bubbled up, and it was like, what? And then I had a protection factor. Fuck, you'll get screwed, for fuck's sake. Because I don't want him making a mistake. I also know who he works with. So I went through that, battled through that. And then the anger for Serco kicked in. And I was like, but I didn't react how I did after I'd thought about it and calmed the fuck down. You know, sort of went, sort your shit out, James. So I was conscious of that, and so I apologised, absolutely. And I even said to him, look, mate, you are moving into a big position here. This is great. This is a total good experience for you to move forward. If you want to grab the balls, you know, grab the ball, not balls, grab the balls, son. Grab the fucking knackers, son. No, grab the ball by the horn and go for it, you know. And I was like, I will help you. I was like, 100%, mate. You need any information, I still hold a storage bank full of 21 years of fucking painting. So I was like, if you need any questions, mate, please don't hesitate to ask me. I'll help you out 110%. If you've got any compliance or fucking health and safety issues, ask me. I'll help you. I will get you through this point that becomes, you know, second nature for you, and you start enjoying the role, and then just push yourself through, mate. You've hit a good position here, mate, to get a good couple of 3 years under your belt, even see the end of the contract out, and then hopefully go into the new contract where they may even pay you more money. So it's a good place to be, mate. Don't sit there and plod along. Take the fucking balls of the bull. So we're not even going for the horns now. Grab the fucking knackers, mate. And learn what you can and start dealing with all the compliance, the regulation stuff, the regulatory stuff, and start dealing with all the risk assessments and all that sort of stuff. Really get into the nitty gritty of giving you that experience for advancement into other roles. Get the courses behind you. So I looked at it massively positive, but at the same time, it was a way of me. I texted him and I was like, I've got to be honest, because I didn't really want to hear it. But at the same time, he would have felt that I was in a negative place, so I wanted to just explain to him in honest terms, you know, why it sort of took me by surprise. But plus, trust me, I've undone all that hard work, that shit work, and he's in a really good fucking place now, and I think that he should 100% grasp it. He should grab the bull by the horns, get learning and take this opportunity to advance himself, you know, so extra money for him, so it's less fucking worry, you know, about anything. So fabulous, you know, fabulous. I can't be happier for him, and I'll help him as much as I can. But it sort of sparks it on, really, and that's what the whole thing was about, is dealing with emotions of things. And like I said, that place, I invested so much of the worst time of my life into it, really. Like I say, excuse me, sorry, it's that drink. I invested so much into that place and got nothing out, no reward at all at the end of it. But what I did do was I undone everything that really should have mattered to me. So I have a little bit of resentment still for that place. And that's kind of why I blocked it away, and I don't want anything to do with it, because it was a really, really, although it seemed a positive time in my life, it was the only positive about it would have been the fact that I got to work alongside my best mate for 6 years. So for 6 years, we did have a good time. He went through the rough, the good, the bad and the ugly. He went through it all with me. So that would be my only positive from that place, if I'm brutally honest, because the negative fallout is just unbelievable, absolutely unbelievable. But I think he's in a great place. He's got a nice small team to get him started. I think that he's worked alongside me closely for 6 years, so he knows how to do these things. And I shouldn't have taken that for granted. This is a great opportunity. But it's just going to show that, you know, how negative effect can have on with depression. I couldn't focus on both of them, so I focused solely on one and turned one into my life and completely undone my family. That's when I fell out with my family, fell out with everybody. You know, I left home and everything because I was in a really horrible place. I walked out originally in my home. I literally got up one day and went, fucking see you later, I'm off. I got a place, I'm off. And I just walked out the door for 6 months. Not spoke to hardly anyone because I was in a really fucking horrible place. And because I was being horrible to the ones I love, my protective side of me took it on and went, you need to stop doing this to them, mate. You're just hurting them. You just need to fucking get yourself away. You're not a nice person. So there was like a little angel, shall we say, you know, sat on the shoulder going, fucking take yourself away. But it just turned into a lot of negativity, years and years and years and years of it. So, you know, here I am now, proving the proof's in the pudding, isn't it? You know, here I am now, rebuilding myself, becoming happier. You know, my mate said it tonight, you know, he's seen a happy glow back in my face, and that really means a lot to me. I'm phoning up regular, the people that make me happy, you know, speaking to people, voice messages, everything. I'm just really feeling a lot better about myself, and that's what I took from that place. I shouldn't get angry about, because I've moved on and I'm still rebuilding and I'm still promoting myself, I'm still learning. So it can be done. Doesn't matter what happened to you in the past, what the darkest day you've ever had, you know, we can get through it. You can get through it. If you can watch it early enough, you can get through it and you can enjoy life again and get yourself into that situation. Recognize what has been dragging you down, recognize what is crippling you, and, you know, just go for it. Grab the bull by the horns. I keep saying that. That'd be my little line in here today. but yeah, I'm super happy, actually. And it's sort of, and even when I was analysing it, I analysed, actually, one of my friends is going off to a completely another country for his job role. So he's got some awesome experiences coming up, and he's taken that for advancement in his career, which is fucking outstanding. So I'm happy for him. And then I've got another friend of mine, Nelly. You know, he's possibly got an opportunity of coming up, which is fucking fantastic. So I'm really happy for these people, and I should be happy, and I am happy. My resentment was never with my friend Kieran. resentment was not with him. It was with the company and the way they do it, and the way that they. And then I also took a bit of a negative effect, because I was like, what did I do so wrong that you turned me down when I know that I'm so good? And that's not a big-headed way. I know I'm good because I invest myself in learning everything. So I felt negative then. It almost, to put the mental health spin on it, it just underpinned me going, making me feel like I was useless, because that's what it made me feel like. It made me feel like, I remember sitting in that meeting and everyone took their promotion. And I remember sitting there going, you've just made me feel like I'm fucking useless. You're willing to give this job away, But when I worked for it and I worked hard and tirelessly and I showed commitment and I've got the best in the fucking in the whole of the contract, you didn't promote me. You said I wasn't ready. And that's where that negative, and that's where I get, that's the resentment bit I can't let go of, because it's directed at me. And I've tried, and I know I try fucking hard, you know. It was like the falling out with my boss this week. It was because he says I'm too enthusiastic. He's got to slow down. I don't want to slow down, mate. Get the fuck out of my way, or, you know, or you know, I'll take your job, sort of thing. You know, I don't know. Just get the fuck out of my way. I'm not like that, you know. I'm ambitious, and I want to get on. And I fall out with people that hold me back. So I've been held back by them. And I jumped through massive hoops of preparation, and even to the point where the interview, the original interview for the job that was at my unit where I worked, they held it at another unit, Bryce Norton, where the other guy that was, you know, going for the interview that they actually wanted him to have, they put it at his unit. So when I said to them, well, I want to go for the interview, why are you doing the interview there and not here? So they made some bullshit up that fucking one of the another painter was coming down from somewhere else. It was a load of bollocks. Absolutely. They wanted to make it difficult for me because they didn't think I'd go. But I was dedicated. I went in. I prepped for the interview. I asked answered every single fucking question. And I remember even to the point where they weren't going to pay me my fuel money to drive there. They were like, no, you're going for the interview. I was like, for the fucking job that is in my fucking section that I've been doing for the last 2 years, and you're giving it to someone else, you're making this difficult. Yes, you are going to pay my... So I went through, this is how bad the company is. They said, well, we're only paying you from work to there. So they cut me off. So I had to theoretically drive up to Odeon to go across. So I lost out on like 30 miles of fuel because that's how difficult they made it. But I proved. And then not get the job over somebody that didn't even apply for the job. That was a kicker in the dicker. You know what I mean? So, it's been an interesting roller coaster, and this is where my animosity comes from. And this is where I feel useless then. And it underpins that. And I sat there and went, so I feel fucking useless now. It almost feels like, what the fuck have I worked so hard for? You know, when people can just get jobs for being there. Should I just sit there and wait and wait and wait and wait? Do fucking, you know, whatever I can to get through. Or in some cases, like some of those people in that place, do absolutely fuck all and still get promoted. And you just think to myself, what was the point of me busting my balls? What was the point of me sacrificing my fucking life with my family for that place to get nothing out of it? To get no reward, but just actually to get a load of trauma to the point where I get anxiety driving past the fucking place. I don't want to go in. I got one of the guys there who works in the same sort of organisation, civil service, trying to ask me for a job, and I'm like, mate, no, fuck off, just leave me alone. I don't want anything associated with that place. That's how deep I feel about it, because I've just got negativity. So that should give you a little insight, really, into the depths of working with mental health and the roller coaster of a ride, and how, you know, I'm struggling now, still, fucking years after leaving the place, still struggling. So it's really important to acknowledge that. It's really important to address it. So it's a bit of a good one there, you know, just to show you the life of dealing with PTSD in a managerial role, really, and a little bit of personal experience as well, you know. But you know, I want to finish off by just saying, you know, super proud of everyone that's around me. You've all the people that are around me are moving forward. You know, even my brother, you know, he's looking, you know, hopefully advancement, but absolutely been smashing it out of the park. You know, Nelly, hopefully, who's going to go for this job, and my mate, Billy's going to go across and go to his new role, and it's a massive opportunity. And obviously, Kieran now getting this today. I'm super proud of everybody that's moving forward, and I shouldn't be a hinder. I'm not getting angry. I promise you, I'm not getting angry with any of you. It was just the circumstances. I don't try to get angry. I just have that negative ethos when it's associated with things that have personally affected me, if you like. But no, I'm super proud. I'm super proud of everybody. And that's the main point here. And that's why I'm glad I got the opportunity. That's why I jumped on the podcast today, because although I'm feeling like crap and I've been on for 68 minutes and I'm ready, ready for my bed, it, for me personally, I wanted to talk about it because it's so fresh, so fresh. And such a really interesting experience that it happened today when I was going to do it. that I wanted to talk. So thank you very much for listening. I really appreciate it. I've not had any feedback from anyone with regards to jumping on and talking to a little live debate with me yet. So I'm thinking I'm probably just going to jump on tomorrow and just do the live debate with myself. But anyway, good to hear from you, everybody. Thanks for listening. And I look forward to talking to you again soon. Take care, everyone.